Why changing the tax system will be a painstaking task. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, three Democrats who went over for dinner with President Trump last night. The entree served was tax reform, with the president looking for common ground from the other party. Most Democrats insist on preconditions before they talk taxes with the White House. These three have not. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is signaling that to help pay for a corporate tax cut of 35 down to 15%, that they may perhaps support limiting or taking away some widely used tax breaks, some of which would affect middle-class taxpayers. Kenneth Rogoff is a professor of economics and public policy at Harvard. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, David.
You know, it's one thing to understand in theory that it's sure going to be complicated changing America's tax system, or at least cutting taxes. But when you start looking at how they would do that, and you see that things like the mortgage interest tax deduction might be in play, I mean, that's a whole new level of, wow, that's going to be hard, isn't it?
I think it's very hard to reform the tax system to make it clearer, simpler, and better, and at the same time, balance the budget as you go. Almost anything they do is going to have to end up cutting revenues, and they'll just say, well, it's going to generate a lot of growth, so we don't have to worry about it. And that's fine, by the way, if they do a good job reforming the tax system and it cuts revenues, fine. It would be a good idea in the long run. But politically, that doesn't seem acceptable to a lot of deficit hawks on Capitol Hill, and I don't know what they're going to be able to do.
So when you hear folks like me on the radio saying, well, they might take a new look at the deduction for state and local taxes, they might take a new look at the current ability to write off interest on debt. I mean, you start doing your personal finances at that moment, don't you? You take a look, you might even pull out your own tax form to see what happens to you.
Well, yes, but that's why it's not going to happen. For example, New York State and California are among the very highest tax states, and they would suffer the most. But they also have a lot of representatives in Congress. How on earth are you going to get all of them to vote for taking away the deduction for state taxes, which would be very bad for their states? Many, many Americans have interest on their homes. They've already cut it back some for wealthy, and how are you going to take it back more? So I think they're going to end up doing something much more modest because they, A, can't get it past these deficit hawks without taking away some of these sacrosanct areas that Americans have gotten used to, and B, they seem to insist on balancing the budget. There'll be some smoke and mirrors. They're going to say, this produces so much growth, 3%, 4%, 5%. We don't have to worry. Ronald Reagan played that game. Maybe Trump and the Republicans will try to do the same.
Yes, pull a Ronald Reagan-era move there. Ken Rogoff at Harvard University, always good to talk to you.
My pleasure, David. Good to speak to you also.
Now to the big Wall Street conference in New York, where some of the biggest names were suggesting that the trading of fixed income, bonds, is no longer where the action is, that trading has become essentially boring, the sort of inertia that is not all that profitable. I needed some help to understand this from Susan Schmidt, Senior Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas.
It's a different world than we saw in the go-go 90s when we had a lot of, you know, movies that came out of that era of what was happening on Wall Street and what you could do in financing and takeovers. That's not where we are today. When you look at the U.S. 10-year right now, it's at 2.16%, and that's a very low rate. And that's a reflection of the flight to safety and people buying up that 10-year rate. With that low interest rate, it puts a lot of pressure on banks to try to find a way to make money.
All right. So what then is an intergalactically large Wall Street financial institution to do if fixed income bonds isn't the place to be? I mean, we got a hint here from Goldman Sachs.
They're looking at other areas. So advisory work, telling a company and helping them execute a transaction and an acquisition, or going into wealth management. You might see them there. And then also investment banking, general stock issuance, debt issuance. Even though that spread is very low, some of them who haven't ventured there are talking about going into lending into commercial businesses to try and gain some extra traction.
All right. Well, perhaps the future of Wall Street. Susan Schmidt at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Thank you for the explanation.
My pleasure.
during the Houston area flooding. The Arkema chemical plant there caught fire. In came investigators from the Federal Chemical Safety Board to figure out what happened and recommend improvements. Now, the Trump administration wants to eliminate that safety board. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Duplicative is what the White House calls the Federal Chemical Safety Board, but no other agency swoops in after a chemical disaster to learn what the root causes are. The board was formed in 1990, and it's investigated 130 accidents, including the BP refinery explosions in 2005, which killed 15 Texas workers. Mike Wright is Health and Safety Director at United Steelworkers, the union representing most chemical plant employees.
They figured out what kind of equipment was faulty, what procedures were faulty, but they went beyond that and they commissioned a study,
which found a broader risk-taking culture at BP. The safety board's budget is a rather measly $11 million. If that goes away, new investigations will not get done, says former board manager Jordan Barab.
Chemical board investigations generally take more than a year. So the newer investigations, for example, the one that just began at Arkema, would definitely not finish.
The House has approved board funding. The Senate has yet to weigh in. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Demand for chicken is up, and companies want to run their chicken processing plants faster. But to do that, the Department of Agriculture would have to relax some Obama-era regs, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
Chicken processors believe their facilities can safely ramp up processing speeds from 140 birds a minute to 175. Why? Evidence from a pilot program started in the late 90s permitted plants to operate at that higher speed, says the Chicken Council's Tom Super.
The plants that have been operating at these speeds have been as good or better in terms of food safety and protecting our workers.
But a Government Accountability Office report found the poultry processing pilot was never thoroughly vetted. Another problem, says Debbie Berkowitz at the National Employment Law Project, is that the USDA already rejected the same industry argument back in 2014.
They went through all that data and said there's enough of a concern about worker safety that we're not going to allow an increase in line speeds.
Now, chicken processors will likely have to convince USDA the industry is safer than it was just a few years ago. Two of the largest chicken processors ranked in the top 10 for severe accidents that resulted in amputations or hospitalizations. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
It took 17 long years to claw this back, but we learned this week that incomes of middle-class Americans last year hit an all-time high. If you missed the coverage in Marketplace's PM show with Kai Ryssdal, you can hear it at Marketplace.org now. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.